Welcome to the Kate and Colby Show,
where we talk about things that matter,
practice the art of coming more alive,
and reflect on just how strange and wonderful life can be.
We're glad you're here. What up, Pod Fam? The episode you're about to hear was our conversation with licensed therapist Dr. Tina Shermer Sellers, who specializes in the areas of sex and shame. And as you're about to discover, Dr. Tina spent years teaching in the therapeutic world, and it was around the early 2000s when she discovered this noticeable shift in the way that her students would talk and feel about all things related to sex and sexuality. And this led her to get curious about what would soon be referred to as the purity culture of the evangelical world during the 90s and early 2000s, and how this has caused an entire generation of uniquely damaged humans in these areas of sex and shame. And of course, as you know, Kate and my story, we are victims of that as well. Dr. Tina has now taken her field-defining research and published two books. First, Sex, God, and the Conservative Church, which you should totally check out if this topic at all is part of your life, explores her findings of sex and sexuality and the purity culture and all that. And now her second book is releasing, called Shameless Parenting. And it's this gorgeous field guide for how parents can raise their kids without heaps of sexual shame. And hey, check this out, in the process, experience some much needed healing themselves. Dr. Tina is truly a one of a kind. And every time Kate and I are with her, we end up feeling so much more hope for the world. Just a reminder that if you appreciate the Kate and Colby Show, you can show that appreciation through a couple different ways. You can hit the subscribe button in iTunes or Spotify or whatever platform you use to listen, or you can head over to YouTube and subscribe to our channel there. It'd also be great if you wanted to leave us a rating and a review, because those things help a ton. And if you want to go next level, you can even show your support for the show by going to buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby. That's all one word, Kate and Colby, KateAndColby. This is a platform where you can, as the name says, buy us coffees, which really just means you send us $5 or more if you want to buy multiple coffees. And you can also sign on to be monthly supporters of the show, which is such a gift. Thank you for those of us who do that. Helps cover the cost of the show, helps us expand our reach, and it helps us to continue to put out these great live shows and podcasts. All right, let's get to the show. And hopefully you're going to make a point to join us live this coming week, as we are joined by our dear friend, Paula Stone Williams, one of the country's leading voices for all things transgender, religion, and church. Her story, if you do not know, is heartbreaking and empowering all at the same time. She's got a new book coming out that we cannot wait to dig in. So we'll see you then. Hey.
What a night, huh?
We found it. We found you. We found, I don't know if we found ourselves. That might be a little over.
I think that's asking a little much for a Wednesday night.
Over ambitious to find ourselves. Hey, welcome to the Kate and Colby Show. We are your co-hosts. I'm the Colby part.
I'm Kate. I hope you found us after all that.
We usually go live at like 6:55.
Yeah.
Instead, it was
7:08.
Oops.
10, 7:10. 7, 8, 9. Technology. Remember that math joke? Why was 10 afraid of 7?
Because 7, 8, 9. I want to know why we're being smited, because on Sunday, our church service crashed entirely. Like, no communion.
Lots of smut. We've been smut.
And then now, this isn't working. So what's happening? Did your live show go okay?
My live show today was great. I had 3 guests and, yeah.
Oh,
but
good.
Then tonight,
a few
it was...
few people are finding us even though we're late. I don't know why I touched that.
Well, it could actually... Anyway... We're killing it tonight. We're off to a great start. We have an amazing guest. Dr. Tina Shermer Sellers is here with us. And honestly, we can't wait to talk to her, so we're actually just going to get right into it. Welcome to the Kate
and
Colt. Well, no, I mean, we're into the show.
Oh.
How come the buttons don't move, and yet I never... Did I not make a button for welcome? That's viewer check-in.
I don't know, baby.
That's why I never made a button for just like the opening bumper. I have the next scene button.
I have
welcome
a solution
to the
for
Kate
this.
And Colby show. Don't take away my buttons. Still need new photos.
Hi.
Those photos are
I know.
Outdated.
We do. But here's what I'm hoping. Oh, wait. We'll talk about that when we do our host check-in. Never mind. We'll get to that. In a second.
Okay.
Okay, peeps are finding us. Good. Hi, everybody.
Hi, peeps.
Sorry we're late.
Highs.
You don't
made
care.
It. Hello, John. John!
No one really
hey,
cares
John.
What time
John's a regular
life.
On my Wednesday afternoon shows. I'm
oh,
really
fun.
Glad that he came tonight.
Oh, that's
what's
fun.
Up, James?
Hi,
James Seamus. Jesse.
I'm so glad we have a James now. We have a James
you.
Now
oh,
because
James.
We have a Mercy. Mercy brought us James.
I know.
I love that.
Mercy came a running.
I love all the connections.
Hi, Susan. It's really good
hi,
to
Susan.
See you, too. Hi, Irma Jean. All right. We have some friends. We have some family. And we're here. Can we check in with our friends and family? I'm a little nervous about my question for tonight.
Oh.
Our viewer check-in.
If you're nervous about it, then I'm going to be horrified.
Remember how I tried to make them all on topic for our guests?
Oh.
No, this is good, I think. Okay, here's the question I have for you, everybody. Sex scene in movies. What's one of the first sexy time moments in a movie that you remember either watching as a kid or being prohibited from watching?
Oh, I actually really like this question.
Right?
I proof.
So take yourself back. And what is one of the first, maybe you were watching it like with your parents or guardians and you like cringe like, oh my God. This is awkward. Or maybe you snuck watching it because it was one that your parents were like, don't watch that movie. Or maybe it was just another experience and you're like, what's happening on the screens?
I have the IMDb so I can try to remember
okay.
what the movie was called.
So tell us whether
because
it's
I know
the movie
exactly.
or the story or the sitch. But just, I'll go first. I'll give you the gift of going second. So I have two things to share for this. And the first is this. Myself and my two brothers and then my... two of my cousins, who I won't name in the event that this ever gets back to them. They would love it. Actually, we love this memory. There's a movie called Starman. And it was
what's
like a it's like an 80s movie. I don't know. I don't even
was
know.
An 80s movie?
I don't even know the plot of the movie. I just know that within the first like 3 minutes of the film, the main actor like gets out of bed and he walks outside and he's buck naked. And you just see his full backside and his two cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it was the funniest thing ever, and we would just rewind and watch that over and
wait,
over and over
that's the
again.
Sexy time?
Hold on, I had two.
Oh.
That's just one. That's my
okay.
earliest memory of, like, a movie
no, that's great.
With something
naked
that, like,
butt.
Yeah, that made me and my brothers and my cousins all just laugh and rewind and play, because it was VHS. You had a...
Yes.
Right? So that was the first one, is my first earliest memory. And then my second memory was we had a babysitter watching us, and they were watching Dirty Dancing, and my mom strictly prohibited us from watching Dirty Dancing because it was too sexy time.
Oh.
So Dirty Dancing was the one I've had earliest memory of, don't watch that, it's not appropriate.
I'm trying
and
to
I don't even remember
Dirty
if
Dirty Dancing even has any, like, role. Well, there's an abortion in it. Maybe that was why your mom didn't want to.
I don't know.
So
those are my first two earliest, sexy yeah, scene in movies, and obviously just a man's naked butt is not a sexy scene.
Just in general, I have like a real general memory of any time we watch, because my parents loved cheesy rom-coms, and now I do too. They gave me that gift of...
Sorry, that was really loud.
...of loving
cheers.
Rom-coms.
Mm-hmm. They both did, your mom and dad?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were obsessed. You know, Nora Ephron, like, just love all things cheesy, problematic as... rom-coms. So anytime there was even like a reference to anything at all, I think even kissing, honestly, my parents would just really loudly, not until you're married. Just
like let the movie play.
Just like
but
over
just
the top
commentary.
Of the scenes. Not until you're married. And so that's just like a general experience with anything, like even
yeah.
just like a reference to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, because I would watch all of those with them, you know, like Sleepless in Seattle and just all those movies.
Have you sufficiently done all the things that your parents said not until you married with me? Or do you remember?
Okay. Anyway, so that's like a general. And then I have a very specific memory of a sex scene in the movie Soul Food. And I watched that up in our bonus room. You remember the bonus room.
I do remember the bonus
room. There were some bonus activities in the bonus room.
And I watched that all alone. And it was my first, like, really taking in a sex scene. And it was actually when I realized what sex was. That was how I figured out what sex was. Like, it occurred to me, like, very explicitly, clearly, like, oh, that's how that works. And by sex, I actually just mean penis and vagina intercourse.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
To be fair.
TBF.
But anyway, that's how I figured out how that works.
I don't even know that I know that movie, but that happened in the movie, and
it was awesome. You learned. Yeah.
You learned. You got a little more education than not until you're married.
Yes, exactly. My parents only ever educated me with not until you're married. So I found out
how
that works.
I have no memory of how I learned, or maybe I still have yet to learn what sex is. I don't remember at all how that came to me.
Okay. What are the other? What are the people saying?
Yeah.
Susan, my mom wouldn't let us watch anything where people were in two-piece swimsuits.
Oh, ooh, ooh.
That's.
That's very restrictive.
Wait, Melissa, what did you have to close your eyes the first 10 times
you
watched it?
Have to scroll back up.
Yeah.
To get to the top there.
Oh yeah, because there's a lot. Titanic. That I watched that movie like 8 times in the theater. That was some good.
Jesse was 8 years old. Time. Jesse, how old are you? You're a little kid.
Don't call people little kids. Sorry. Just 'cause they're young.
Especially because he's like 6'7".
You're now that old guy who I know. Calls people who are younger.
I turned 39. I am almost done with my third decade of life.
Okay, there's a lot here. Holy smokes, people are having fun with this one. Good job, babe.
Oh, Melissa Meyer said Dirty Dancing as well.
Oh, okay. And you had to close your eyes for the first 10 times of watching it. There's some Top Gun, Ace Ventura, Titanic. Oh, my goodness. People in swimsuits. Why are people in swimsuits an issue? Susan, are you kidding? G-rated only in my childhood home. Yeah. That was my parents, too, except for rom-coms. Hence the very loudly over the top
not
of any.
Not until you're married.
Not until you're married. Oh, God. That's I can't wait really to hear funny. What Tina has to say about this whole situation.
Might have been Moulin Rouge, says John Warwick. I didn't understand the jealousy moments. Oh, now he's like, oh, wait, I can remember, but I'm not sure I can put it on here. Jesse Hawkins. Y'all laughing at bonus room means it's going to be a great night.
Listen, that was where we had our first sexy time.
Oh, Jesse's 31. Yeah, you're a little whippersnapper.
Can you stop? With
yes, I will stop. I just it makes me feel like I'm aging more gracefully if I am more antagonist towards
y'all
the little
are
one,
great.
The young people.
Oh,
sorry, I bumper-upted you.
Okay, Karen helped me come up with a term for this. What is it?
Bumper-upted.
Bumper-upted yeah. me. Bumper up, did me. Yeah. I'm in the middle of talking, and he just hits one of his little bumper buttons.
I didn't know you were in the middle of talking. The brain already signaled to the finger to go to the button. Okay.
But there's a comment on here saying, I don't remember. My parents were pretty open about it. And I'm like,
oh.
Lucky you. That's amazing.
What's that like?
Right. What's that like? Also, happy birthday, Jesse. Did you say, yeah, in 11 days, happy birthday.
That's close to my birthday. June 5th. It's my birthday. Which you are excited about this year.
That's what I was going to start talking about. And I said, I'll wait till the host check in. I'm so excited.
Now.
So you got to understand, Colby is is such a beautiful human and loves life so much and loves excellence so much. Enneagram 3 loves, like, threes are actually very similar to sevens in this way, like so enthusiastic about the joys and beauties of life. Oh. Which is a great, great thing.
Thanks, babe.
And it's horrible to buy gifts for.
Aw.
It's impossible to please.
Got me right in the feels. There's
that's where you're different from sevens. You buy them anything, and they'll be like, yay! And for you, it's like, if it's not $1 million, it's not going to make him happy. Remember that one time when I got you something off your list, but I got you, like, a slightly different brand or something.
And my friends threw me under the bus.
He secretly hated it and was so upset because it was just a little bit so off, not that. As high a quality.
Not mad about you getting it.
No,
you got was fine.
And then you vented so to it your was friends.
It was an iPhone case.
Yeah.
And I requested a very specific iPhone case for Christmas.
I veered off the path a little bit. Cole was bummed.
And she got me a different one. And it was fine. Entirely adequate. But I think
not
the next week,
enough,
but like the that. Next week or so, when I'm having breakfast with my friends, I mentioned, like, oh, I got a new iPhone case.
Well, what was funny about them outing you is that they did not realize they were.
Correct.
We were all just hanging out, and they were talking about, like, when you accidentally, you know, get something for somebody that's not the greatest, and they were like, yeah, like when you got Colby that iPhone case, and I was like, huh?
So,
anyway, so this, I finally feel like, so this Christmas, I was extremely good at getting you gifts. I got you some rad stuff that you're still super happy about, still using. And then this birthday, you don't know yet what the things are, but I've gotten, I will fill y'all in after his birthday because you're going to love it too. Everybody's going to love it. Ooh, yes, this is exciting. I can't wait to tell y'all about it. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Going to love it. You're going to love
I'm really
it.
Excited for everything you just said there. Not to burst your bubble, but we don't actually go on the air for like 4 weeks after my birthday. So you're going to have
we'll
to
catch
wait.
Them up then.
Okay. But
I'm very excited because I feel that I have finally got my groove in figuring out how to do gifts for you. And maybe that will only be these two holidays, this Christmas and this birthday, and I'll never figure it out again. But I'm so excited. Like, I told Colby today, I'm like, I much prefer this feeling of genuinely knowing that you're going to be so happy than that feeling I usually have of dread, knowing that you're going to be miserable and hate everything I do for you. And he goes, really? You prefer that?
Is that a preferable feeling?
Yes. What are you doing?
I wanted to share something with you. So you know how I get these comments from time to time?
Y'all, okay.
On my YouTube videos.
Can we chat about this really quick?
And on my Instagram now.
I have to confess something too. You might have seen it actually. But the other night I made do you ever write a status update on Facebook and then immediately delete it? No,
I usually post it. I should have deleted it.
But my status update was this. Do you want to know my entire self-care manifesto? Here it is. Stay out of your husband's public profile comment sections because it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
And I do not feel that I have that thing where when I see how awful humanity is on the internet, that I go to like a dark place and can't get out of it. I don't feel that I have that.
Yeah.
Until I go to your pages.
Interesting.
And it's not necessarily that like, he's my husband, leave him alone, like that protective thing. So I'm trying to figure out why it's so specific to your stuff.
Yeah. Because those types of comments you're clearly familiar with and you've come across.
See them all the time on the internet with other people. And then I don't feel that I'm like, they're attacking my spouse and I love him and that's sad. I don't feel that. Mm-hmm. So I think what I'm landing on that it is so triggering is of our actual personal... You are just constantly messing with stuff. You know that, right?
It's one of my greatest strengths.
But I'm trying to have a conversation with you. it's triggering of our church trauma.
I'm hard to buy gifts for. I'm hard to do shows with. I'm hard to be married to. And I know this. And yet I often pretend I'm not.
Very much.
I make you
But anyway, all I'm trying to tell you is I think that it's a very specific can't handle the comments because it's all stuff that you have posted about where you're addressing the shift in leaving conservative Christianity and becoming more progressive. And so I think it just gets into all those old stories of when we'd get kicked out of churches and have those shitty things happen and the onslaught of friends and, you know, fellow church members coming after us and posting on our Facebook walls, well, did you read this Bible verse? And you're going to hell for all conscious eternal torment. I don't even remember the phrases anymore because I've been
good.
Out of it for Getting so that, long.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So here's a comment that came 7 hours ago, is what YouTube says. Y'all remember the video we shared on the Kate and Colby Show a couple weeks ago, the one I created where I talk about the story of Keith Jarrett's album. You remember that? Okay. You remember that?
Yes, baby. Okay. I remember
the video I've called "I'll Be Your Vera," and at the end, it's like, so if you feel like you're ready to give up or walk away, and you know, "I'll Be Your Vera," channeling Val Kilmer, "I'll Be Your Huckleberry."
Jesse just said, "Sum up of this conversation, Colby is hard. Let's talk about sex now."
Well, that's that's appropriate. Now I got to do an explicit tag on this about podcast. We were so close. I'm kidding. This one never would have gotten non-explicit.
Aren't that all ship podcasts sailed. Explicit? I'm on them, so they
that's
must
true.
Be.
Okay, so Judah Guerrero, and yeah, I'm calling your name out, Judah, whose profile picture is Bill Murray. Can't even use your own face. Okay, so Judah says this. So I'll be your Vera. He says, the most I won't read the whole thing because it's obnoxious, but it's fun. "The most compelling thing you've said for me in this video," quote. And at this point, I don't know. This could go either way.
Right. Yeah. This could be one of the comments
like this was really lovely. Thank you. "The most compelling thing you said for me in this video," quote. And then he quotes me, "If you feel like you want to walk away, I'll be your Vera," end quote. Parentheses. And Judah writes, "For people who do not know this word, in Slavic languages,"
okay,
"Vera means faith and truth." Again, I'm not entirely sure which direction this is going to go, because this, yeah, it could go either, it could be pretty cool.
Yeah.
End parentheses, new paragraph. "This man," speaking of me, "is out to be God. If anyone read the story of Lucifer, you'd know he was banished from heaven by God because of pride and idolatry of himself. He didn't want to follow God. He wanted to be him. He was beautiful, but also pure evil. That was enough for God to remove him from his sight, and other angels followed. People, this man is not a Christian, nor do I think he even believes in God. He's out to be God of his own universe. The Bible talks about this sort of wickedness and narcissism in the passages of John. Blah, 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 blah. Everyone who is a Christian and watching this video happens to stumble on my comment. Know that he's not a Christian, but a very confused secular human atheist who needs God's salvation. Pray for him." So,
remember when I said I can't hang out in the comments on Colby's pages?
His takeaway is, when I say "I'll be your Vera," what I'm like secretly communicating in Slavic languages is, "I'll be your truth.
And therefore our God."
"And therefore the God of my own universe."
Cool.
Why do people think that if my idea of God is not the same as theirs, that it's just me creating my own God?
Because it's how they believe.
That pisses me off, actually. That's a really obnoxious straw man.
Everything they post
on your pages. I get my idea of God from the Bible. You just make yours out of your own desires. BT Dubs, I get my idea of God a lot out of the Bible, too. Not totally. But anyway, it's really obnoxious. People are obnoxious. So I'll be your Vera. I'll be your truth.
Karen, A, like, super neat that he thinks you do double meaning things in Slavic languages.
I know.
B, I think he called you pretty.
He did.
So,
like Lucifer. Anyway. But I'm having fun with that series on my Instagram.
Are you next going to do "to be clear" when you call me
Vera? No. But that's funny.
Yeah, that's been a fun series you've been doing. I like
it. Yeah.
I get it a lot. Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. Yesterday was a rough day.
How come?
I don't know. I felt like I was spinning a lot of plates, but didn't feel like I did anything productive. And I don't think I ate.
Is that your nightmare?
It is one of my nightmares. Yeah. I don't think I drank enough water yesterday or today, by the way.
Good thing you have a giant beer there, and that'll help.
A giant beer. It's like 98% water, I'm told. Pretty much hydrate while you drink it. So yeah, I'm good now. I'm better now.
Yeah. is that all it takes for you, is like just the next day to get through that? Or do you do something? Like, do you have a practice that moves you through that experience? Or is it just sleep it off, wake up the next day, okay, I'm good? Or do you have to complete the things that you didn't get done productive?
No. I mean, that would help, but I certainly didn't.
But that's
do that
not what
yesterday.
Gets you into a better headspace.
It's no.
just moving through it.
Yeah, sometimes it
time.
Is just a new day.
Yeah.
A new day and fun things to do in the day and fun things to look forward to. So,
yeah. Distract yourself and move through it. Nice.
How are you?
I'm okay. Yeah. I'm right. I'm tired and, I mean, I feel like I've been saying this every week on the Kate and Colby show, but I'm just so freaking tender. Like, everything is just making me weepy and I told you all last week I don't like calling that emotional. I don't like that word to use as a way to describe the experience I'm having.
To say that you've been emotional lately.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Tender is the word I've landed on. So, yeah, I just keep being like, okay, is today going to be another? Like, I'll wake up and I'm like, today another tender day? Yep, still here. And I don't know if I'm, like, causing myself to keep perpetuating it by, like, waiting for it. And am I still here? Still doing this again? But anyway, just, I think it's just where we're all at. I have been hearing more and more folks, even Glennon talked about it today, just more and more folks addressing all of our feels as we move further into. All the language sucks, right?
I know.
Out of pandemic, that sucks because we're not out of pandemic. People are dying.
Back to normal.
Back to normal.
That's never will be a thing.
Right? So I don't know what words we use, but as we're re-entering the world a little bit, I guess that's the best way to say it. I am hearing more and more folks talk about it now, and that is helping me. That's at least helping the anxiety part of it, right? When you feel that others are having that experience.
Yeah.
That's helping. But the tender part, I don't know. I think I might just be in a new stage of life. I'm curious. I might ask Tina about this because I think it might just be, oh, once you realize your kids are like not tiny anymore, you just become a like tender mess about them all the time. Like just everything they do or anything, you know, I'm filling out Zeke's college application because he's going to this. It's super cool. He's going to a college high school hybrid for the last 2 years of high school. So I have to fill out his college application. I mean, he's in already, but like fill out all the forms for it. And just knowing like my baby's going to college next year is just, I think it's just that. And it doesn't just stay with me in the moment. I think it just stays with me throughout all of day and everything that's happening to me. I don't know. And we've been home with them for the past year. And now we're kind of finally venturing out and doing other things. And they're venturing out and doing other things. And I'm like, oh, I really liked that year of just being with my kids. You know me.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of parent who, I mean, I probably drive everyone nuts because it's annoying when a mom just like only wants to be with her kids all the time. I really like being with them all the time. So I think that's part of it is just separation anxiety.
It's fair.
I liked the year we had at home with our family.
Yeah.
It was comforting.
Word to the bird.
It was good. So anyway, that's my long-winded way of saying how I'm doing.
Tender.
My garden's awesome right now.
Your garden's so killing it. All your gardens.
It's a new season. I know. I have like 28 of them now. It's fun. So there we go.
Yeah.
Thanks, Susan. Y'all are great.
Yeah.
Oh, y'all are so cute. I love you in the comments. It's good to see you and be with you tonight.
Shall we get to our guest?
Yes, I'm very excited.
But first,
comes. First, I shall try to point at things.
I love that little fall down. Hey, if you would like to support the Kate and Colby Show, specifically in this moment, I'm speaking financially because we do this show for free and out of our own pocket, and yet not out of our own pocket anymore because we've had people that have said, yes, I would like to support the Kate and Colby Show. And you can do that by going to buymeacoffee.com/KateandColby, KateandColby. And you can do a one-time gift, a one-time donation. So say you're watching this and you're like, that was a great episode. I really want to say thanks. You can go and just buy us a coffee. They're $5 each. One coffee, two coffees, 12 coffees. Or you can become a monthly supporter or what we're calling baristas.
Y'all, and so, that is so huge when you do that. You make it so that we can keep doing this thing for like ever.
Yeah. So special shout out to our baristas, Bill and Patty, who just signed up last week. So many hearts to you, Bill and Patty. Thank you for believing in us. And thank you for believing in the show and supporting this show. Again, if you'd like to do that, buymeacoffee.com/KateandColby. All right.
Thank you.
Let's get to our guest.
Okay, but only if you stop saying
I know. Why do I do that? I see the words in my mind and they have letters that sometimes I feel get neglected and ignored. And sometimes I will say those letters. I'm an equal opportunity offender. Hello, welcome, Dr. Tina.
Yay. Hi, guys.
Oh, we can hear her. Yay.
Yes, we can hear her. We can see her. It's so fun.
We had just a little bit of trouble getting sound to work tonight.
Yeah, we did.
We're here.
But we made it.
Welcome.
So good to see you guys. I've missed you.
I know. Likewise. Miss
you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been way too long. Way too long.
Let's real quick take it back to the beginning. How did you? Because you two met first, and I want to hear you tell the story of how you met, and then I want to tell the story of what happened when she came home after meeting you.
I'm kind of scared. I don't know what that story is.
It's fine. It's not a long story. It's just a short
little thing. I met Tina on a rooftop in New York at a Shia Sculpt conference. And I remember thinking, this is it. Here she is. This is the woman that I want to like model my life after. Like, this is who I want to be. This energy, this way of being in the world, this holding like equal parts passionate and relaxed, both. I just fell in love.
So. Well, and it was so mutual, Kate. You know, even as I'm sitting and listening to you talk about your tender, you know, girlfriend, you undersell yourself so much. You know, your tender is like female insight. It's female wisdom. Every time you put your thoughts to paper, it is like the whole world needs to read what you write.
Yep.
You know, it's what's happening in the world. It's the brilliance of where we're going. It's as patriarchy is ending and the brilliance of female wisdom is rising. You are one of those voices. And I think you don't realize it. And yes, your kids are growing and your heart is there and you need to be sinking into it. And it's all the feels. It's all the feels every effing day. And you have to feel them all. And it's all the hard and all the wonderful, and it's all the things. And you're one of those brilliant people whose rivers run so deep, it aches and feels all the things. Wonderful, and you just get it all. And I'm so grateful for you. And I'm so glad that you're one of those people that when you put pen to paper, you say the things that other people don't know how to say, but their bodies feel. So you're just gifted in that way. And not everybody has that.
You know when your favorite person in the whole world speaks life into you? Thank you.
Thank you, Tina.
I love you.
Well, that's the show for tonight.
Bye, everybody. I'm done.
We just brought Tina on just to fill Kate's bucket.
Thank you, love. Thank you so much. Every word means the world to me. Thank you. Yeah. What was your thing you were going to say about me?
Well, yeah, Tina? My thing was, Tina, when Kate came home from meeting you, the phrase that sticks out to me the most is she said, "That is the most empowered person I have ever met." Like, she knows who she is and she moves through the world just entirely of her own accord and her own power. And it was as though it was a type of human that you'd really never encountered before. I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
Just this model of being fully just who you are and empowered. It was really remarkable to hear you talk about Tina in that way.
Yeah, and every time I've hung out with her since, that is how I come home from it. I come home with like, it's a filling of my cup of like, okay, that's right, a reset. Being with Tina is like a reset of like, oh yeah, that's what I want to be in the world. I forgot for a second, but I'm back. I redo it. And that's what it'll be like after tonight too. I'll go like, and then I'll need my Tina fix again. But
yeah,
that's who you are.
Well, it's true what I'm saying. I'm not just saying it to blow smoke up your, I don't know what, you know, it's really true. I read what you write. And I think that every time I think you should be putting these in books. You should be putting these out into the world. You are gifted in that way.
Thank you, love.
Yeah.
How are you? How is life?
I'm good. I'm in the home of my grandchildren, which is the next best thing that happens in life. Children have children sometimes. Not all of mine are going to have children, but some of my children have children. And then it's like amazing to watch your children be parents and then have these wild squirts that run around and you just get to like bask in their glory. It's just so wonderful. It's like the happiest thing ever. I'm in heaven.
I love it. I just can't even imagine. Like, is it kind of like having your kids as babies again a little bit, but like sweeter because you don't have to do all
of it. It's so much better because you're in a different space. You know, you're in the space of realizing how precious time is.
Yes.
And you see the whole life cycle in a different way.
Yep.
Right. And so you know what's important. You know what is like truly dangerous and what isn't dangerous. And you know what's really precious, you know, you just eat up so much, you know, and I don't know. It's just, it's being helpful to your children is such a joy for me, you know, like, I'm like, you know, here, let me take, you know, when I'm allowed, you know, let me take them so that you can go take care of your marriage or go do these things. You know, I mean, there's so many things that I didn't get. I didn't have parents that were there or whatever, you know? And so, yeah, there's just things that bring me joy that are just so joy filled, you know, and so fun. And yeah, I just love having these little buddies that I get to play with. And I love listening to my son talk about what it's like to be a father and watch all these things happen and watch my daughter be an aunt. And yeah, it's just really fun. It's just so wonderful. I love it all.
That's beautiful.
There's a fire behind you. Are you at a place that actually is chilly right now?
Just up in Washington.
Yeah, it's a little bit cold. I don't have the heat on, so I've got the fireplace on because we kind of had doors open and kids leave things open a lot, you know? And so things were kind of cold earlier.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's true. We're over here in
San Diego. We have not really gotten to a place where we're consistently warm yet. Hopefully it's around the corner. We had a like gorgeous weekend and then it was like rainy and cold today.
Everyone else is like looking forward to the warm and I'm like, oh, dreading it. Oh God,
oh,
it's coming.
No.
I know. Once we start to get warm, like I won't come to San Diego.
Exactly.
When you guys are like just warm, we're still freezing, you know?
Yeah.
So. Yep.
How it goes.
So Dr. Tina, you've got a new book that I want to that we're going to get to here in a bit.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if you can get us
to
the book by working backwards a little bit, because I think to my knowledge, you know how like you'll say, or, you know, I didn't have any gay friends growing up, but really you did have gay friends. They just weren't out at the time. You're the first sex therapist that I've ever met. It's possible I've met other sex therapists. They just didn't tell me they were, but I believe you're the first one I've ever met. And I am very curious how one gets into that line of work and maybe why, like where, is there a way that you could share with us what got you into this line of work?
Well, you know, I say on my website that I probably have always been preparing for it and never really realized I was. I started out as a junior high and high school teacher. I taught at La Jolla Country Day School up the street from you. That's where I started.
I didn't know that or remember that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I knew you were in San Diego at some point, but I didn't know.
I did my undergrad at San Diego State. Yeah. And started teaching there and actually taught sex ed there in junior high level and science class. And that was always really easy for me because I grew up in this Swedish immigrant home that was very comfortable right around sexuality. And I talk about that a lot. It was from teaching junior high and teaching privileged junior high kids that I learned from them that what got in the way of their learning, what was going on at home. So kids who had alcoholic parents or alcoholic siblings or had suffered sexual abuse or whatever, those were the kids, they would come and confide in me. And then I would realize that that's what was getting in the way of them learning. Right. And so from there, I decided to go back and get my master's degree in marriage and family therapy because I wanted to do intervention at the family level, right? And so when I went to school, got my master's degree, then I also almost immediately was asked to start teaching in the program I just graduated from. So even though I started a practice and did clinical work, I started part-time teaching in the program I just graduated from. And one of the classes I was asked to start teaching was the graduate level human sexuality class. So this was 1992. One of the assignments I had students do, which was an assignment I did when I was in school, was write your sexual autobiography, which, you know, a lot of people listen to and they think, oh my God, I would never commit to paper what my sexual story was, right? Like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But when you go see a therapist, you want your therapist to know what their stories are, right? Yeah. Because you want them to know where they begin and end, right? And you as the client begins and ends. And that could be their gender story, their family of origin story, their medical story, their sexuality story. Well, when you live in a country like ours that has no comprehensive sex education, where 90 to 95% of families are silent and shaming around sexuality, then we don't have a coherent narrative around our sexuality at all. You know, we remember, getting in trouble, right? When we were playing doctor, or we remember our first kiss or whatever, but we don't have a consistent narrative, right? And so it's so important, since we have so much reactivity around sexuality and so much weirdness around sexuality, that you really want your therapist to know their sexual story, because otherwise all they're going to have is biases, right? Yes. And mythology and a bunch of crap, yep. Right? And so this was a very important assignment that I did in grad school. And so I carried that assignment forward. So I would give them like 70, 80 questions, and it would take them back in through their families of origin and ask them how they learned about gender and sexuality and messages. But then it would walk them through their childhood, their adolescence, and their young adulthood. And I would say to them, I don't want you to answer every question. What I want you to do is let this guide you, springboard your thoughts, right? And just kind of guide you through. And then look at the legacy that you're bringing forward in your life and ask yourself, is this the legacy you want to bring forward in your life? Or are you wanting to change something? Because you will bring forward this legacy unless you want to change it.
Yeah. Right?
Well, I've read well over 600 of these in my career. Right around the year 2000, I started to notice this dramatic shift in the flavor of these stories. They started sounding like really people were like humiliated and disgusted with themselves and with what they thought during their growing up years, with what they felt during their growing up years, with what they did and didn't do, but what they were describing hadn't changed.
Yep.
It hadn't changed. And I couldn't figure out why what they felt and thought about themselves was dramatically shifting so much. Like I couldn't really figure it out. And I mean, like literally it was so bad that I would be in tears reading these papers. And they would take me upwards of 2 hours to read. Some of them were 30 pages long. I mean, that was not uncommon. And so I would go into my chair's office and just weep. And so I started to ask more and more questions to try to figure out what exactly was going on. Slowly over the course of about a year or two, what I learned was I was getting the first wave of students that hit their adolescence, like hit 15 or so in the early 90s, when we were hitting more of a peak, if you will, although we hit this for a long period of time, of those that were hitting abstinence education and the purity movement, or what we later called the purity movement, really a huge number of people in the early 90s that were hitting that sort of 14, 15, 16 range. Yep. And just so much of that information was filled with fear and misinformation. And they were frightened to death, and they were really told that they were horrible people. And this was getting metabolized in their bodies in really deep ways, right? And you guys know the stories now. And so this was 2000, and I saw it 2001, 2003, right? It just kept going. And so I started speaking about it and writing about it. And in 2006, because it started getting out there that I was talking about it. I was asked by an editor of an online journal called The Other Journal, Intersection of Theology and Culture, to write an article about it. And so I did. And all I really did was talk about what I was seeing in these papers. Right. And then I also went looking and saying, if was anybody else in the Christian world in sort of the academic side of things saying anything about this? And there was James Nelson.
Can I ask a question to that point real quick? Were you, give me some context. Were you yourself in a Christian? Were you raised Christian?
I was at Seattle Pacific University.
Okay. And were you a practicing Christian? Like, was this?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But she didn't grow up with the purity culture though.
Right.
She missed that. And she grew up, like she said, in a culture that was very open about bodies and sex. So she like had that as her foundation.
Got it.
And then was in the Christian. So it was this great, like, coming together of worlds that made her so specifically gifted to see this problem and speak to it, because she had all the Christian language and knowledge, but the totally different growing up sex experience. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And Colby, that's a really good question, because I think what most people don't understand that's in more your age group, like, you know, under 40, 45 or so, is that I'm 61. So those of us that grew up, hit our adolescence in the 70s, or many of us, I shouldn't say everyone, but a lot of people this is true for Brian McLaren, you know, we hit the Jesus movement. So sociopolitically, the 60s and the 70s were a time of pushing back against, like, I'm younger than this, so I'm sort of Obama's age, more or less. You know, I wasn't around the Vietnam War necessarily, but I was young for that. But there was a lot of people pushing up against authority during the late 60s and the early 70s. So the Jesus movement was a time when rock and roll music was sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right? There was a lot of rock and roll music, and Christianity was really something where the focus was, who was Jesus?
Imagine
Jesus
that.
Was about grace and mercy and accepting all people. And the people who were most popular in the Jesus movement were those people who had been saved from hard drugs.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so when you would go to Calvary Chapel in Southern California, it was just this big church, right?
Yeah.
Chuck Smith's church. It was all about, you were really cool if you had come out of cocaine or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I was a cheerleader. I wasn't cool at all. Right?
You were in the wrong era.
I wasn't cool. Well,
but so Christianity was a very different time.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was very liberal, if you will. I mean, it was so focused on grace. You know, The Cross and the Switchblade was a popular book in those days.
Mm.
It was very grace-filled. It was very non-judgmental. It was very much about you are accepted no matter your background, no matter what you've been through. Yeah. And so even sexuality was, well, if you're gonna have sex, just make sure you're in a loving relationship. It was just, nobody was in your business. It was just a very different time.
How far?
It's really hard. It's really hard to like conceptualize.
Everything took, you have to understand how much sociopolitics plays into the church world. Everything took a shift in 1980 when Reagan was voted into president.
Okay.
Everything took a shift. Mm. And when we started pumping money into abstinence education, and we called the religious right and the moral majority crawled into bed together, everything took a shift. And so to really understand the purity movement, you have to read Frank Schaeffer's book, Sex, Mom, and God.
Mm.
It's really important to understand how everything took a shift from the 60s and 70s, from the 80s forward. And what happened for me was I had become a Christian in the 70s. And so I was like, when things took a shift and I turned 20, and things went in my mind went crazy. I was like, I'm still over here with Jesus.
Yeah.
You're going to take the church over that direction? I ain't going with really? You. I'm going to be hanging out over here with Jesus.
Because why would you? You were grounded and you didn't, there was nothing compelling about the shift that took that way.
Well, for me, that had to do with the Empire Church. That didn't have to do with Jesus.
Yeah.
And so I've always been this weirdo over here in my book, you know? And so even when I went to work at SPU, I was still just me, this Christian who's always just stayed, you know, looking for where's there been justice, where's there been love, where's there been grace. And that's been where Jesus is. And while I had to really do a lot of work to understand the purity movement. And I remember having a conversation with Frank Schaefer because his book was so helpful to me in understanding what happened sociopolitically because I missed it.
Wow. Yeah.
And what do you attribute that missing to? Because you had kids, were your kids not at that age and stage, or were they just not in a religious context where that was happening?
No, not really. Because, well, so they have me as a parent.
Yeah.
So my son's born in 1986, right? And so he turns, you know, 15, whatever, so many, whatever. So one of my favorite stories is I pick him up from youth group. We go to a Presbyterian church in Seattle. So we're in Seattle. It's a pretty liberal city.
Sure.
I pick him up from youth group. He's 16. He gets in the car and he says to me, "Oh, Mom, I am so glad you weren't at youth group tonight." And I'm like, "Why?" You know, and he goes, "There's this woman there and she has the audacity to say to us." Now, mind you, my son has been in this church since he was, I don't know, 2 or 3. And there's always a new youth person, right? Every 3 or 4 years, sure. Right? So they bring in this woman. He thinks he runs the youth group because he's of that kind of personality, right? Yep. He's cute and he's sassy, right? At that age, he is. And he says, this woman gets up and she looks at everybody and she looks at the girls and she says to the girls, "Don't let any boy kiss you too long."
Oh, God.
Okay.
No. Yeah. I think that's what he's, "Don't let any boy kiss you too long." And Christian raises his hand and he says, he says, "Mom, this is what she said to all the girls. Don't you let any boy kiss you too long because it's not fair. It's not fair to them. It's not fair.
Not fair to the boys."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or maybe she said, "Don't kiss the boys too long," something like that. Yeah, something like that.
But either way, it's not fair to the boys.
Yeah, it's not fair. It's not fair to the boys. Yeah,
it checks out. Sure. I'm with her so far.
It's purity culture.
Oh, really? I said, "Oh, really? That's interesting." And he said, "Yeah. So you know what I did?" And I was like, "No. What did you do?" Because you know, he was just a little sass monster at that point. And he said, "I just raised my hand." And she called on me and I said, "So what did you say?" And he said, "So you mean to tell me and the rest of the boys in this room that somehow the girls are responsible for what we do? Because I'm sorry, that's not the way that I've been raised."
Wow.
And that's Tina's parenting, everybody. Can we talk about her new book now?
Insane.
But you know, that, of course he wasn't saying that to say, "Oh, I've been parented different." He was saying that to put her in her place.
For sure. Yeah.
For sure. That was not, he was being a sass monster at the time. Right.
But he was right.
But still,
in every way.
Still, Balaam's donkey. God speaks through asses often. It's totally, totally reasonable and biblical.
But you know, he did get, there was obviously purity stuff going on as it still is to this day. And that is one of the things that's still going on, right? Is that idea that somehow women are responsible for this idea that men can't control themselves, which of course we are all held responsible for what we say and do. That's always been the case. But it's been it's been come in some of the urban areas of the world or of the United States, it's a little bit less than it is in some places. It's still very strong in the South.
Yep.
You know.
All right. So you're reviewing now in the early 2000s, you're reviewing these same right. sorts of papers and questionnaires that you've been yeah. getting at that point for almost a decade. Yeah. And you notice the significant yeah. shift, yeah. not in the actions, but in how people are feeling about right. them. Yep. And so right. that's when you start to dig in to explore what that is. And that's sort of when you right. discover this.
Yeah. And really quick, right. I wanted to pick up from there, but really quick, when I read that, so she describes that experience at the beginning of Sex, God, and the Conservative Church. And when I right. read that, my whole body just went, oh, okay.
Like, I remember
because
that.
It was such a, yeah, I remember me coming to you like, oh my God, because it was my first time of realizing like, oh, this is so noticeable that somebody who's not in it could be reading these papers and be like, you didn't even know what to call it yet. You just knew it was there. Just right. felt so validating.
Well, and the symptomology I was seeing was the same symptomology of people who had suffered sexual abuse as a child.
Yes.
Wow.
And I wrote that in that article that I wrote in 2006. I was, I think, the first person in the country to say that I know the church isn't intending this, but these people are experiencing the signs of sexual abuse. That's what they are experiencing here. And we have to do something about this. We have to stop this, you know, and we have to look at it. Like we have to look at, if you're not bearing the fruit, then you're doing something wrong, right? Like what is happening here?
Yeah.
And of course, now we know that because we are X number of years down the road now, and we have X number of people who've written so many great books that have said this now time and time again, right? But that's what started when I wrote that article and I started hearing from people around the globe. I realized I've hit a nerve. I'm going to start now doing hard research. Mm. And I started then working on the book that took me 11 years to write because I was challenging the church, which is not what I didn't set out to do that, but I needed to say, has the church always been sex negative? How did we get here? No, we have some sex positive things on the Abrahamic line. We have some beauty here. We need to do something about that. And then we can heal. Here's how you heal. And here's how you integrate sexuality and spirituality. And that's how that book came about. Yeah.
It's such an important book. It's been absolutely imperative in my life journey. It was what gave me the courage to say things I needed to say for our healing, yep. for my own personal journey's healing, yep. to have language. It was really impactful. So yeah, thank you for writing it. Thank you for spending 11 years on that piece of
thank
work.
You. No, it did exactly what I was hoping it would do. And I am so grateful that I did too. And it continues to, it sells more and more, better and better each year.
So yeah, it makes everyone
really, really grateful.
I love it.
That I did it.
See, and now long it's shelf life with books too. Like that, right? Because mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. still need it. We always say that about Unclobber too. It's the same kind of thing. It's like people are always needing this book. So it's Sex, yeah. God, and the Conservative Church, everybody.
Oh, yep. Tina Erasing Shame from Sexual Intimacy. And it's now out in Audible, finally.
Perfect.
Fun.
That's
fun,
a good fun, one fun. To have on Audible. Wait, is it your voice?
It is my voice. And not only is it my voice, but I did it myself. So it's a little DIY.
Tina did it herself. You're about to do one yourself.
Yeah.
It can be done.
It's hard. The Shameless, I actually flew to Nashville and did it with a friend of mine in his nice. Studio. So it was easier, much Better. More fun.
Easier.
Yeah.
What would you say is maybe one of the biggest or the most often points of feedback that you got from and get from Sex, God, and the Conservative Church? Like, what is the thing that seems to resonate with people most when they contact you?
I think people describe more than anything just feeling so incredibly liberated. You know, it's like it just makes things fall in place. They understand that they not only are not alone, but that they were never meant to feel shame around their sexuality, that it was created on purpose by a loving God, and that they can embrace it in a way that feels good, feels loving, feels contained, you know, feels boundaried, feels, you know, just it doesn't have to be in a box in a way, but it feels okay, you know, feels, you know, not rule bound, but also doesn't feel like it flies everywhere either. You know, like it has a place to fit, you know, and it feels like it's endorsed by a loving God who loves them and sees them as beloved, you know, and that it has this long, beautiful history that they never knew was there, you know, and that they have a model for how to heal. And that feels so hopeful to people. And then there are practices for how you integrate spirituality and sexuality, you know, and so they have some ideas of things they can actually do both themselves, that pleasure is good, and they can do things themselves, you know, because we have this idea that self-pleasure is a bad thing. And there's so many ways that actually pleasure is so, so healing, you know, and that you can experience pleasure with a partner in ways that are healing, and that's actually endorsed by a loving God, that God created us good. You know, life is to be abundant. There's enough that's hard.
Sister.
Mm-hmm. I'm here for that.
There's enough that's hard.
There's enough that's hard. That's correct.
What's Coach Emma say?
We were made to feel good.
We were made to feel good.
That's right.
Made to feel good.
Love it.
So good. Okay. Now, you've got a new book.
I do.
I'm so excited.
And it's out or coming out? What the release date?
So it's out right now in Kindle and Audible, and it'll be out in the book form June 1st.
Okay, June 1st.
And the book form has places in it where you can write, because so it's divided, as you
it's
know, it's
pretty.
Divided 0 to
it's
2.
It's a pretty book.
2 to 4, 4 to 6. And then at the end of each section, there's place to keep notes about like where your kid is and what's going on with your kid and all that.
You've inspired, Tina,
tangible things.
You've inspired one of our viewers. I'm just going
to
put that up there. I don't know if you can read that.
Gotta go masturbate.
Okay. So thanks for inspiring some of our viewers.
Go.
okay. So Shameless Parenting is the name of the book. Now, talk to us about what is this book? You sent it to me and I loved it. But
so
tell
it's
us,
funny,
where
you know,
did this
I
come
feel
from?
Like the book was like a total God thing, because a few years ago, I've been the material that's in this book, I've been teaching to physicians and therapists and clergy teachers for years, for over 30 years. Because those professionals don't get it in grad school, believe it or not. And then when you grow up in the United States, we don't get comprehensive sex ed. And so your professionals don't know this stuff.
Best country in the world.
And so it's terrible because who do you go to when you have sexual concerns?
Yep.
You go to your doctor, your therapist, your clergy. Those are the people you go to. And research shows that up to 40% of people have sexual concerns or intimacy concerns or whatever, right? And our kids naturally have unfolding body curiosities and tasks, behavioral tasks, emotional tasks that they do. That's what we do when we grow up, right?
Yeah.
And if you grew up in a family that stuff was silenced or whatever, then when your kids do the natural things they're going to do, you are going to freak out.
Right.
Right. So we don't know what's normal when our kids do what they do. And so we have our freak out moments. And so then we inadvertently pass down the shame that we got.
Yeah.
We can't help it.
Right.
Yeah. And then we wonder, why does this stuff get passed down generation after generation after generation? Uh-huh. And is it epigenetic? Because we don't know better. We almost can't help ourselves, right?
Sure.
And so this past year, I watched in Washington how we almost didn't pass comprehensive sex ed again.
Wow.
We came so close to not passing it. And people were saying, oh, they're trying to teach kindergartners how to give oral sex. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know,
that's an interesting take. Sure.
I mean, you know, it just drives me nuts. So I thought, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to develop cheat sheets for doctors, teachers, clergy, whatever. And the cheat sheets are going to be 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper. And on one side, it's going to have the emotional and behavioral tasks. Then they're going to be divided age, you know, 0 to 2, 2 to 4, whatever. And in each age section, it's going to have, here's the emotional and behavioral tasks that your kid's going to do at this age range and the sexual curiosities they're going to do. Like at this age, they will find their genitals. They will. And they will think it's a great thing. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be beginning. Yeah. And they're going to be beginning to define their identity. Like this is the no stage or whatever, you know? And so I was going to talk about those things. And then on the back, I was going to say, here's the shame triggers that you're likely going to feel as a parent if your parent didn't do this well. And this is how it's going to feel. And here's how you begin to heal those shame triggers when you feel them. Yep. So questions I would ask you, you know, whatever, to reflect, right? And then here are the top resources you're going to want to have in your home when your kid is this age. So the top books for your kid, the top books for you, and the top websites to know. Front, back, really easy.
Yep.
0 to 2, 2 to 4, 4 to 6, all the way up to 18. And then I was going to send them to an illustrator. I mean, I did all this, send them to an illustrator. But before I did that, I got a hold of some colleagues of mine that I knew would be really good at critiquing them for me, you know, would see things that maybe I missed. And one of my colleagues said, Tina, these are going to be great for professionals, but have you thought about putting it in a book for parents too? And I thought, well, I hadn't really, because it's not like it's filled with stories. These are very didactic, like very like to the point. Here's just the stuff you need to know. And she was like, yeah, but what I think is really valuable about this is a lot of parents are like, cut to the chase. Tell me what I most need to know. I don't have time to read story after story after story. Just tell me what I need to know and tell me what I need to get, right?
Here,
the
here.
Most important stuff. And I said, okay, well, let me see if I can find a really good book template to put this in. So it does, it also doesn't look boring. Like it just, it really reads well. And I found a really good book template that I could put it in, put pictures in, put it in large, like 14 font, make it like read really well. And so when I put the whole thing together and put an opening chapter and a closing chapter, I just thought it like it was meant to be. Yeah. Like it was beautiful. And I thought, if I were a parent, this is what I would want, because I could turn to right where my kid is, know exactly what I could read that section in probably half an hour, 40 minutes, know exactly what books I needed, know what I was going to face, what I needed to work on, what I needed to take to my therapist if I knew it was going to be really hard. Yep. Honestly. Yep.
Yes.
And then I would know what was coming next. Perfect. You know, and I thought, this is the book I think parents have been waiting for.
Yes.
You know, and then I just passed it around to some, you know, colleagues and friends and said, tell me what you think. And they were like, oh my God, Tina, this is awesome. This is great.
This is it.
Yeah, this is it. So I feel like it was like meant to be, like I was just kind of led along the way to write it. And really, there's never been a book out there that has the sexual curiosities and the shame stuff in it anywhere. No one's ever put it together. And it's not rocket science.
That's what I was about to say. I was just about to say this doesn't exist. And also that's upsetting. Like
exactly. Exactly. It's not like we're not all feeling it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like every parent I talk to says, help me not do what my parents did to me. Please. And I get calls all the time. Like, you know, the books, you guys have read it. The book starts with a story of somebody that called me. Yep. I get calls like this or emails like this all the time. Like, help, was this normal? Or help, what do I do? Or, and sometimes it's littles, you know, 5, 6, 7 year olds. And sometimes it's 14, 15 year olds. And they're just tongue tied. They just don't know, is my child's life ruined, whatever. And usually it's like right on target, you know, they're fulfilling their job description and they just need someone to hold their hand through it. And once I just tell them these little things, they take a deep breath and they're fine. They're on their way. You know, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. They feel so huge to us because of our triggers. And then you just help us go, oh, actually it's just like human. Just like,
yeah,
normal.
Human. Totally. Yeah.
Tell our viewers and future listeners, what up, PodFam? A little bit about, is there, thank you. Is there a religious component to this book?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Do you want to speak to that a little bit about your choice to keep it not in that realm?
Well, there wasn't necessarily a choice to or not to. It's just that I think we're all raising our children and we're all trying to, I'm really leaving that up to people to put values in there. I talk about values. I talk about how you want to talk about your values, but I'm not putting myself up there as somebody who knows how you need to do your family.
Yep. Yes.
You know, you make the decision of what's right for you, for your family, and how you want to talk about that. I'm telling you sort of what children have been unfolding their developmental life in the same way the brain unfolds in the same way across time and across history and across culture.
Yeah.
And what I am most wanting and what research shows is that when parents can remain the resource for their child as the child grows up, which means the child still wants to come talk to you.
Yep.
The child is going to get involved with sex later, make safer sexual choices, choose partners that are better suited for them. They're going to have better sex lives when they get older, more intimate lives when they get older, and they're going to want to stay closer to their parents overall.
Wow.
And that's what parents want. Mm-hmm. And the only way that the kids are going to want to do that is if the parents are non-reactive.
Yes.
If the
Colby's
parents
putting titles on the screen.
Contain themselves.
Yes.
But if parents get authoritative,
yep,
and start laying down the law, kids will tell
out.
You what you want to hear.
Yeah.
But they will go underground.
Checked out. Yep.
Yeah.
They'll
look good on the outside,
yeah,
but they will go underground.
Yep.
And the thing is, that's dangerous.
Yep.
That's dangerous because what the kids do is they go to their friends.
Yep.
And they go to the
yes,
media, and
that's
that
right,
it's never going to be as
that's
good a
resource.
It's
not the resource.
That's
yep,
right. That's right.
Yep.
Not as you are going to, as you potentially yep, could be.
Yes.
And so what I'm putting in your hands is the very best resource that you can have. And if you follow that resource and you become non-reactive, then you will be the
yes,
best resource.
Yes.
For your child. You
yes,
will be their calm, safe presence. And even though you may hear things that are hard for you and your kids will make mistakes, but let that be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Stay their resource.
Mm-hmm.
Stay their person.
Yes.
Because you will be so much safer than anyone else out there. But
yes,
trust me.
Can you do that same thing with Sex, God, and the Conservative Church? Because I
yes,
think knowing mm-hmm, our people, they will want that one too.
Yep.
Still a good resource. Yeah,
it's not easy to be a parent, and it's not easy to hear your children's mistakes, but believe me, you don't want them going underground, not the way the world is right now, not with how fast everything is right now, not
yeah,
with what happens on social media,
internet.
Just take a deep breath, keep a neutral face, you know, and say, wow, babe, that sounds hard. How can I support you? How can I be there for you?
Which you have, I think, done brilliantly with our children. You have been mm-hmm, and continue to be their person, their safe person that they know they can talk anything about. And you hold that space with no judgment. You hold it with curiosity.
But it takes what Tina's talking about of doing that person. Like the only
yeah,
reason I can be that is because I do my personal work
that's
of,
right,
of reading Sex, God, and Conservative Church.
So that you're
do
not
my
reacting
own,
yes, and
exactly,
getting triggered or
yeah,
working through that in real time.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that in your head, like Tina's saying, I'm just saying it again as a parent now of kids in these ages. It doesn't mean that you stop having the freakouts altogether, but you become able, like, I can't tell you how many moments in my head I'm going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah.
But my kids
right,
never know it because
yeah,
you are, that's
right,
healing is that you're able to, oh my God, oh my God. And then deep breath, like you said, calm face, neutral reaction. Okay. Well, that's interesting. That sounds hard. What else would
yeah,
you like to tell me about that? How can I help
yeah,
you?
And
right.
And I point out, or I name how I think brilliant you are at this, not just to butter your bread, although I do like doing that, but also to point out that you were super jacked up by purity culture. Like you were deeply affected by that. You're not someone who sort of escaped that and now you're sort of really good at this shameless parenting.
Like you can heal. And
yes.
You
that's what I'm getting to is like, even if you're listening to this or watching this and you're like, oh geez, well, I think there's not really any hope for me. I just hope my kids can hang on. No, like you actually can. Isn't your subtitle something like, it's about healing, like you can heal yourself in the process, right? So it's in
this process. Shame from sexual intimacy. Yes.
Yes. And healing yourself, like as parents, you can do the healing.
Oh, you mean the subtitle
well.
For shameless?
Subtitle for shameless parenting.
Yeah. Shameless parenting. What is it? Everything is you need, everything you need to raise shame-free, confident kids. And heal your shame too.
That's right. There it is.
And heal your shame too.
Yeah. Yes. It's possible,
and
people.
That's what the book, I mean, I had somebody recently say to me who I had sent an art copy to, and she said, you know, I don't have kids, and maybe I will someday. She said, but reading this book, what it's teaching me is that I could.
Yes.
I could have kids.
You could do it. Yep.
And I can see that I can heal. By reading this book, I can see that I can heal. And what happens when you look at birth to two to four, 4 to 6, and you walk yourself up through, and even more so if you actually get those books for you, even the little books, is that you go, oh, that was me. That was me at 2. That was me at 4. Mm-hmm. That was me at 6. That was me at 8. And you can reparent yourself. Like you can heal.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And that is such a good thing. Like you can take care of all of that stuff before.
Yes. Yeah. And I love that. Thank you for what you said about myself, but it's a whole group of us, like all my friends. It's what people are doing right now, which is so encouraging. Like there's a movement of people who are reparenting themselves and healing from shame and then parenting their children entirely differently and breaking all these cycles. And it's gorgeous. And it means I'm not doing it alone. I get to do it, which I couldn't do it alone. I am the way that I am because I do it in a community of other, mostly women, to be fair. Who are breaking those cycles and it's gorgeous, which leads me to something I've been dying to ask you. How are you feeling about where we are now in culture around all of this? Like, are you seeing a big shift from purity culture? Like, I know you already named that we're kind of still in purity culture. It's not like we've totally ended that, but how are you feeling about where we have gone?
Well, I love the conversations that have been happening. And And I love the freedom that people are giving each other to be wherever they are. You know, like people are in different places in their processes, you know, and they're letting each other be messy in it. And that I think is really good. That is really good.
Thank you.
I am sensing that there's not an enormous amount of judgment in it. And there are places where there have been, but I'm really enjoying the places where there isn't a lot of judgment in it. And it's like, okay, you be where you are. And I'm over here with this in this way with it. And that's fine. I can, you know, you be wherever you are. And it's hard, and that this is a hard journey and it's a messy journey. And it was trauma. It was traumatic what we went through. I mean, that's where the joining is in the trauma of it. And there's a lot of, how can I support you in it?
Yep.
And how was it for you? And here's how it was for me, you know, and I really like that. So I think I really like the richness of those conversations in it. And I think where I have pushed back has been in any place where there has been any place of judgment. It's been like, I don't think we need that. I don't think we need to be judgmental about it at all. Yeah. Because there's enough of that out there in the world and we just don't need to add to it.
Speaking of that, so I know that you will hold this so well. So I really am hoping you can speak straight to our viewers right now, because they are posting questions about, what about those of us who, like, our children are already grown and gone, and we regret that we didn't have this, and we regret how we raised them in this. Like, what do you do about that?
Then I would say, if your kids are able to and want to, then sit down and talk to them about how it is that you come to this later, you know, and just be like, oh, I wish I had come to this sooner. Like, I wish I'd seen this sooner, you know, because what I have found is that a lot of parents who come to this, you know, later,
yes,
really have good healing conversations with their kids around it. Wow. Like, I just wish I had seen the unhelpfulness of the abstinence ideas or the purity ideas. I wish I had seen what was in there that wasn't helpful. And I think I embraced it all because I believed what was being said to me in church, and I wanted to be protective of you, and it came from a good place. But I see now that it may have been hurtful, and I'm sorry if it wasn't helpful to you, and you know what I mean?
Yes. Just kind of like, yeah.
And open the conversation, because what I have found is that those people that have just had really good conversations with their kids. You have to be willing to just hear that your kids are probably going to say, yeah, it was really crappy. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It was not very much, it wasn't helpful, or wasn't
just
fun.
Just sit with
or
that.
Whatever.
Just let him say that. Like,
let him say that. Exactly. Yeah. And be like, yeah, darn, I wish I had done. And, you know, and then, and tell your part of the story too. Say, and you know, this is what I got from my parents, and it was really shitty too. Mm-hmm. And I wish it would just been all different. It's epigenetic. I mean, we've got this, it's been coming down for generation upon generation upon generation upon generation. And we haven't known how to do it better. We just haven't known how to do it better. We haven't.
Yeah.
And so we've done the best we can, and it's not been very good.
Yep.
But it has been the best we've known how to do.
We didn't know what we didn't know. And yep.
We didn't know what we didn't know. And what I'll often say to people now is, what we know is this thing called 101 minute conversations, which is how you have the age appropriate conversation at 0 to 2. 2 to 4, 4 to 6, how you have 101 minute conversations, that's the best you can do, right? And it is what they do in the Northern European countries.
Yeah.
And the thing that's so cool about it is that you can change the legacy in one generation, so that the default you give your kids will be so entirely different that when you sit back as a grandparent and watch your children, you'll be shocked at how they do it so different than you. Wow. And they'll be like not working nearly as hard as you. In fact, they won't be working hardly hard at all.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, you know, their child has got, they're like, my son said to me, this is so fun. But you know, you have to understand that I didn't have to work nearly as hard as lots of people did either. But my son was saying to me the other day, he goes, oh my God, Mom. He said, the other day, his wife is Emily. He goes, the other day, Emily and I looked over and Quincy was sitting on the couch. She's 3 and a half, sitting on the couch, and she had a blanket over her, and she must've had her hands down her pants because her eyes were just rolling back in her head. I was just laughing so hard. And I'm thinking, this is what's so great, is that he grew up and I grew up with it, and he grew up with it. And then we can have these kinds of open conversations. Yes. And there's shame is nowhere in the room, because it hasn't been in the room now for generations.
For so long. Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. And really, she's getting to be the age where you can say, and you get to go to your room and do this.
Yep.
Yep. You know? And it's great.
And that's not shame. Having different ways of doing things or times
No.
I loved what you were saying earlier.
We had a conversation
earlier
the other night at the dinner table, and it was totally different. It was like, how do you get a 3 and a half year old to not eat their boogers? Which is just a different conversation.
It's a reasonable question, though. That's a different book. That book has yet
Let
to be
me
written.
Know.
But you know, it's on the same plane, and that's what's so nice. It's the same plane. Yeah. I just love it.
It's beautiful. Yes, exactly. When a conversation about boogers and a conversation about masturbating feel the same, that's when you know you've got it. Beautiful.
Exactly.
Love it. All right, is it lightning round?
Let's bring this home to the lightning round.
All right, near.
Beep. I think you know how this goes, right?
I don't know if I do. I probably do.
You get quick questions from Kate, and you just try to give the best right answer you can. And then you're great.
I'll give the right answer.
And then you're graded at the end on how well you did. The highest The highest score so far is turquoise. See if you can beat it.
Favorite movie of all time.
Oh gosh, I'll say Mary Poppins.
Oh, do you like the new one?
No, I like the old one.
Yeah, like to where you couldn't like the new one, or
no. I'm just old fashioned that way.
Yeah,
it's fair.
I love Mary Poppins. Self care. Fill in the blank.
Sitting in the hot tub right now with Quincy, especially.
Ooh, beautiful. Hot tubs are good. Name something you're deeply grateful for right now.
Oh, right now, this is most of the time, but I'm super grateful for my family.
Yeah.
And my health.
Yeah.
Was there a time during this last pandemic where you were unable to be with them as a result of,
I couldn't be with my grandchildren. Well, and my son had a baby in the middle of it, and she was born with a lung condition. And so not only could I not be with him, but I really couldn't be with the littlest one for even longer, in part because of her condition.
Wow.
Oh, that was really
painful.
Hard.
Yeah, that's really hard. So painful.
Yeah, really hard.
Okay. This is just thrills me. It never fails to be the best. What's your weirdest fear?
Weirdest fear.
Just say your fear. They're always weird.
I have fears like leaving the planet too soon. You know, I have those kinds of fears, which isn't a weird fear.
Yeah.
I just have so much fun. You know, I have so much fun with just living. I'm a seven.
You are. that helped. We should have started with that. FOMO. Now I understand.
Okay. Are all your fears existential then?
I'll have eternal FOMO.
Or do you have any like snake, spider, like those kind of fears?
Oh, I don't like spiders.
Yeah.
I don't like spiders.
That's fair. Okay. We found our one not weird fear guest.
She's like, what? I don't want to leave the planet. That's it.
It's reasonable. I like hanging out with my peeps and doing fun things.
I love it.
Bad FOMO.
Who's a famous person you swear you'd be besties with if only you knew each other?
Oh my gosh. Dan Savage and I are best friends. He just doesn't know it.
Dan Savage. He's a fascinating, wonderful human.
That's amazing.
Oh, I just think he's the best. And there's so many times I've listened to him and I'm like, dude, gosh, dang, we need to go out for a drink.
I love it.
That's cool.
I also love that you're like, we are best friends. He just doesn't know.
Well, you know, I've got a little bit of an ego thing going on.
Okay. A book you believe everyone should read.
Oh my gosh. I just recently read Cassandra Speaks.
Ooh, and
by Elizabeth Lesser. Kate, that's definitely a book you got to read.
Going on my list.
Yeah, it's super good. There's so many books out there that I love so much, but that's one that I recently read that I think is really good. Your Body Is Not an Apology by Sonia Renee Taylor. Every woman needs to read for sure. And I love Sonia Renee Taylor anyway. She's another person that I would like to be in my inner circle. Yeah, there's a couple off the top of my head.
Okay, this is what we ask every week to everyone on our show. What's sustaining your soul right now? What's keeping you going?
Keeping me going. Looking forward to doing some traveling with my husband sometime soon.
The excitement of it is keeping you going.
Yeah, just I think unplugging a little bit.
Do you know where you'll be traveling to or just travel in general?
Well, we first got to clean out our house that we've lived in for way too long. But I want to hole up in Europe somewhere, find a flat in Europe somewhere, and then go off from there. We've got friends in places like Sweden, and yeah, just I want to go off from there for a while. Have kids meet us in different places. So we'll see if that ever happens or not. Who knows?
Sounds heavenly.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For hanging out with us.
We so love good you. To see you guys. So good to just see you. Miss you to death. Hope to see you sometime
we
soon.
We have to make that happen. It's been way too long.
If you end up I not doing
you
your
come down in San Diego.
Yeah, great.
Yes, please. Yeah. Please, please, please. Good. You come sit in our hot tub.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Okay.
All right. Love to you, friend.
Love you, friend.
Love you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Boy, that was a weird. Look at that transition video. It was like up in the corner. Anyway.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was awkward. Do something it was awkward.
Weird. We're just having weird tech week.
Yeah.
Being fine. Smited. Is she not the best person?
She is the best person in the entire world. Just love her. I'm really glad that she's in our life. And I'm glad she's in your life.
And now she's in yours, if she wasn't already. So that's Tina. And I hope that you can eat up all of the resources she has out in the world. And just go follow. I always have to look it up because it's a mouthful of a handle. Can we put her Insta up?
It was on there the whole time.
Oh, was it the whole time? Oh.
Dr. Tina Shameless. It's like Northwest.
Oh. Are you being serious? It's Northwest Institute of Intimacy. What are you talking about?
Her Instagram handle's at Dr. Tina Shameless.
Okay, she has a new one. Yeah. That's not the one that I follow, but anyway.
Yeah, that was wonderful. I agree, Jesse.
Forgive me for taking us to weird.
Speaking of wonderful, if anybody would like... I have weird buttons.
Colby and Button.
Don't forget, if you'd like to support the show and do a one-time gift as a thank you or a support or whatever it is, or become a monthly barista, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/Kate. And Colby, next week, what do we got coming up, Kate?
More favorite humans. Okay, favorite, as my friends always say, my besties always say favorite is a tier, and it's true. Favorite is a tier. And on my tier of favorite humans, Paula Stone Williams and Deneen Akers. I'm very excited. Paula's book, As a Woman, right?
Yeah, that's
what gorgeous, gorgeous stories. And
brilliant and heartbreaking and inspiring book.
Yes.
All in one.
And then Deneen Akers, Holy Troublemakers, an Unconventional Saints author, editor, gorgeous human whom we love and adore, will be here. And then, after that, we're going to take a quick break from live shows. During that time, a bunch of Kate and Colby just talking to each other about life episodes will air on the normal podcast.
So, if you're just a viewer, y'all, you gotta subscribe to the pods, because these are gonna be coming at you hot through the iTunes and the Stitchers.
And y'all, when it's just
Spotify's.
The two of us in the garage, it gets all kinds of weird.
It's a little of a different experience. Some say better, some just say different.
So if you want to check that out.
And then we're gonna take the rest of the June off from the live show.
And then our calendar for July is already full.
How do
going
we get
into
such
August,
luckiness
and it is
with the people that say yes to
exciting.
Us and join this?
One of the things that we're really excited about is that everybody on our show is always like friends of ours, people that we know and do life with and work with. And we had, for the very first time ever on our show, someone we'd never met before, which was Stacy, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Furness?
Yep.
Did I say that right?
Furness. She says rhymes with tennis.
Stacy Furness. Oh, okay. Stacy Furness. And that was so much fun. Remember, we were like, we were so nervous.
A new person.
A new person. First person on the show that we didn't know what she was going to be like. But coming.
Can I say really quick about that? It's super awkward for me. When they do the tech rehearsal, because I have to like immediately be
bossy.
Tech guy. Like,
I'm sorry.
Okay, hi, I'm Colby. Nice to meet you. Now I need you
turn
to do some things.
Off, click this thing. Yeah, that would suck. That was our first experience of having a guest we'd never met. But coming up in July, we've got some people that like we just discovered their work because they reached out to us, and we're excited about this. We're going to be talking about grief. We're going to be talking about death. We're going
dreams,
to be about dreams.
Grief dreams. There's
grief
a doctor
dreams?
Of grief dreams.
Doctor of grief dreams.
Did you know that's a
How
thing?
How excited am I right
it's
now?
It's a thing. It's a thing.
If y'all know me, you know I'm excited.
Yes. Children's book authors.
Stephanie, we do have the best guests.
Wink. Plant that seed. Let that grow. All right.
See y'all next week.
See you all
that was it, right?
Next week. We love you.
Paula Stone
be well. Thanks. Thanks, Susan. Great show. We concur. The end.
If you enjoy The Kate and Colby Show, here are a few ways that you can support us. Subscribe to our podcast feed on whatever platform you use. And when you do, go ahead and leave us a review or rating. This will help others discover our show. Find and follow us on social media using the handle @KateandColby. And speaking of social media, we'd love it if you share our show with your friends. Everyone is looking for a great podcast recommendation, so help them and us out. Finally, if you visit us at kateandcolby.com, you can subscribe to our newsletter, learn more about us, the hosts, and discover great resources for coming more alive. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded in San Diego and produced by Holy Living Studios. Thank you for your love and support. We do this show for you, our pod fam. Until next time, be well.